General Organic Biochemistry, a brief survey. This unit will address the concept of lipids. What are lipids? What's the difference between fatty acids and non-fatty acids? How can somebody get fat if they eat a fat-free diet? Where do trans fats come from? How can I recognize a steroid structure? And just exactly what is biodiesel? In an introduction to lipids, we need to talk about what lipids are. Now, when we talk about lipids, we're talking about a great big collection of molecules whose structures hardly seem related. Well, in that case, how do we define lipids? Well, a lipid is a substance that is extracted from a natural source, plant or animal, and a substance that is soluble in non-polar solvents. And frankly, it covers a lot of material. Let's look at an organizational scheme for lipids. Lipids will include the study of fatty acids and esters. Now, some of these esters are esters of those fatty acids. Some are not. It will include steroids, a study of steroids, the structure of steroids. Under fatty acids, we're going to briefly mention the prostaglandins. Under esters, we're going to give extensive attention to fats and oils, and a little less attention to waxes. And under steroids, we're going to talk about structure of some of the hormones. Now, lipids function three ways in the body. They are components of cell membranes, they are involved in the storage of energy, and they are involved in the hormones and vitamins. You may see them grouped a little differently from the way I'm grouping them, but we're not going to worry about it. You may see them grouped as fatty acids, glycerides, non-glyceride lipids, and complex lipids. But let's go with the way that I have mentioned because that is going to address organization having to do with structure. Fatty acids, esters, and steroids are definitely different structures. And after we study those, we're going to briefly mention lipoproteins and maybe take just a moment on biofuels. Now, do you remember what we've studied about fatty acids? For our purposes, we say fatty acids contain 12 to 22 carbons, but they are even numbered ones. If they are odd numbered ones, they are not fatty acids. Those fatty acids may be saturated, such as stearic, palmitic, myristic, or they may be unsaturated, such as oleic, linoleic, and linolenic. A lot of those names should be familiar to you. Those fatty acids will react to form esters and will undergo saponification to form soaps. But we need to note some additional characteristics. Let's compare oleic and stearic acids for a moment. Do you recall their structures? Well, here's oleic acid. Now, it is a monounsaturated fatty acid. It has 18 carbons in it, and the geometry around that double bond is cis. Remember, that is very, very important. Stearic acid, on the other hand, has the same number of carbons, but it is completely saturated. There are no double bonds in stearic acid. Both of these acids have the same number of carbons, but their melting points differ amazingly. Here is the melting point of oleic acid. Now, 16 degrees Celsius is about 60 degrees Fahrenheit. It's about 60 degrees Fahrenheit. So if you have some solid oleic acid, you can expect that it's going to turn liquid at about 60 degrees Fahrenheit. In other words, a warm room, that's going to be a liquid. On the other hand, you have stearic acid, And stearic acid has a melting point of 70 degrees Celsius. 70 degrees Celsius, I think if I recall correctly, that's around 159 or 160 degrees Fahrenheit. In other words, you have to heat it up right much to make it melt. They both have the same number of carbons, but those melting points differ substantially. And the question is why? Well, we have noticed that as the number of double bonds increase, as that number increases, the melting points will decrease. There's got to be a reason for this. Let's have a look at the geometry of these molecules a little more closely, because the geometry about that double bond is the key to the answer for these differences in melting points. Here's stearic acid. Now, this molecule is a straight chain. Well, you know how it goes up and down a little bit, going across. And at the end, it's a carbon double bonded to an oxygen and single bonded to an OH. Now, if you bring in another stearic acid molecule, those two can get pretty close together. And because they can get pretty close together, then one molecule is attracted to the other by van der Waals forces. If you will, the nuclei of one molecule are attracted to the electrons of the other. And it doesn't matter how those things are positioned, as long as they aren't positioned end to end. They can be positioned on any side, front, top, bottom, it doesn't matter. They're still able to get close together and have van der Waals forces take hold. Let's look at oleic acid now. Here's oleic acid. Remember I told you that the orientation about oleic acid is cis? Well, here it is. It's got a big bend in it. Bring in another molecule of oleic acid. Maybe bring it in upside down. Doesn't have much room to get close to each other. The two molecules don't, do they? Well, what if you brought it in just exactly right? Say you brought it in just like this. It still can't get very close. And because they can't get very close to each other due to the geometry about that double bond, they then do not have much opportunity for van der Waals forces to take hold. Hence, they are not as attracted to each other, and it takes less energy to cause them to become a liquid. Now, there is an important reaction of unsaturated fatty acids. The reaction is hydrogenation, and you've heard it before because we've talked about it before, back when we were studying alkenes and alkynes. This reaction of hydrogenation is sometimes called hardening by the food industry. So if you take a fatty acid, such as oleic acid, and you treat it with hydrogen in the presence of nickel or something of that type, it's going to saturate, and it's going to saturate and form stearic acid. Okay, that's the way you can convert oleic acid to stearic acid. But what if you don't want to convert all of the double bonds that are available to saturate them? What if you don't want to convert all of them? You just want to convert some of them. Well, if only part of the double bonds are replaced, it's called partial hardening or partial hydrogenation. And what happens then is instead of having all cis orientation on the double bonds, sometimes it causes trans fats to result. And this is where you get trans fats. When the food industry tries to convert some of those partly unsaturated fatty acids to partly saturated fats, in other words, they do partial hardening or partial hydrogenation. When that happens, unfortunately, it doesn't always leave you with a cis formation. It can leave you with a trans formation on some of the remaining double bonds, and that can be very dangerous. Now, there are two essential fatty acids. I think we mentioned these back when we were studying acids. Linoleic and linolenic, remember? Well, we talked about why are they essential, and I told you at that point that the human body could not synthesize them. You see, enzymes in the human body cannot put a carbon double-bonded carbon beyond carbon 10. So, the human body cannot form these unsaturated acids like linoleic and linolenic. So they are critical to good health, so you have to eat something that's got them in it. Now let's have a look at esters. Under esters, one of the things that we're going to talk about first are glycerides. Now glycerides are esters that contain glycerol or glycerin as a part of the structure. They could be esters of fatty acids with glycerol, or they could be esters of phosphoric acid with glycerol, or they could be esters in which you've got glycerol with some fatty acids and some phosphoric acid in there. So these are interesting combinations. Now we're going to start with glycerol, and we're going to allow glycerol to react with a fatty acid. Now you saw this back in esterification earlier, but we're repeating it in a little different context now. If you were to take glycerol and allow one molecule of glycerol to react with one molecule of your fatty acid, so that only one place would you have the ester formed, this is called a monoglyceride. A monoglyceride. An ester's been formed only at one position on the glycerol. Well, what if you had two acids? Yeah, like this. What if you had two molecules of the acid? So that in two positions, the acid would react with the alcohol glycerol and form esters. And it might form an ester that looks like this. And this is called a diglyceride. Now, granted, you could have one on the first one and one on the third, but most generally we're interested in ones on the first and second. A diglyceride. Okay, what if you have three? Well, if you have three, then you form one on each one of those three OHs of the glycerol, and this is called what? Sure, a triglyceride. And what's another name for triglyceride? That's right, it is a fat. So do you see that a fat then is an ester of glycerol and fatty acids? All the fatty acids don't have to be the same. They could be a variety of them. But it has to be glycerol and fatty acids, the triple ester of it. It's a triglyceride. Fats are more correctly called triacylglycerols. Well, short is triglycerides, but they are triacylglycerols. They are the triple ester of glycerin with three fatty acids. And remember, the acids can be the same or they might be different. Look at this. Here you have glycerol, and here you have three different fats. Now, this fat's going to have some interesting properties where melting point is concerned, but you could take this fat and you could hydrogenate it or harden it and change it from polyunsaturated, so that is a polyunsaturated fat, to a saturated fat. Or you could partially hydrogenate it or partially harden it, changing it from a polyunsaturated fat to a fat that is not quite as unsaturated. Do you get the idea? That's important to you when you think about the foods you eat. Fats give food flavor. Yes, much of the flavor of food comes from the particular fatty acids that were used to make up the fats. And not only do fats give food flavor, they also give food texture. Animal fat contains a high percentage of saturated fats, generally somewhere between 44 and 70%, while your vegetable oils will contain a much lower percentage of saturated fats as a rule, somewhere between 10 and 50%. Now let's look at a case in which a fatty acid is replaced by a phosphoric acid group. Okay, look, here we have fatty acid group on the first and second carbons of the glycerol, but on the third carbon of the glycerol we have a phosphoric acid group. Now, this is very particularly important to people in the health sciences. You see, we can take that hydrogen. Did you see what I did? We can take that hydrogen and we can replace it with choline. And if you take that hydrogen off the phosphoric acid and replace it with choline, you produce a lecithin. That's right, you produce a substance called a lecithin. And when you look at your lecithin, this part right here is very polar. See the positive charge and the negative charge? That's very polar. This part of the structure is sometimes called the head of the molecule, and it is attracted to water and to other polar solvents. While this part up here is the ester part of the fatty acids, it's very nonpolar, and it is not attracted to water and so forth, but it is attracted to things that are nonpolar. Now keep that in mind. In your lecithin, you have your polar component, and you have your nonpolar component. Now look at this. I took that choline off, and I replaced choline with ethanolamine. Now I have converted this from a lecithin to a cephalin. But there's something I want you to see. Do you see that this part right here is very polar, while this part up here is very nonpolar? So the polar part, or the head of the cephalin, is going to be attracted to water and other polar entities, while the nonpolar portion is going to be attracted to fats and other nonpolar entities. Waxes. What are waxes? Well, they must be esters because I have them stuck under esters. Well, waxes are actually esters of a fatty acid and a long-chain alcohol. I'm telling you, these are long-chain alcohols. And some examples are lanolin. You're familiar with lanolin. Carnauba wax. Carnauba wax, yeah, that's a wax that's often used on cars, but sometimes it's also used in lip balm. Beeswax is a wax, and it is an ester. And candle wax is also a wax that is an ester. Here's the structure for beeswax. Now take a look at it. Over on the left, you see you have a 16-carbon acid. And on the right, you have a 30-carbon alcohol. They form an ester, and the ester is beeswax. And the thing is, these hydrocarbon groups are so long and so large that the little polar part in the middle is insignificant. And so these things are completely insoluble in water. That's right. Waxes. Let's look at steroids. Steroids play a big variety of important roles. You know that. But you are expected to know the numbered steroid structure. Let me show you what it is. Here it is. Now here's the basic structure. I'm going to show you how to mark the positions, how to count the various and sundry positions. Are you ready? Here we go. This is position 1. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, go over to the left now, 10. Now go up, 11, 12, 13, 14. Now where's 15? It's over here. And here's 16 and 17. Now, this position up here is referred to as 18. This is 19. And this is 20, etc., because sometimes 20 may have a bunch of carbons strung out there. Now, suppose you have some medications that you have to learn the structure for that happen to be steroids or steroid-related or steroid derivatives. Well, the easiest thing to do is memorize the basic steroid structure right here. Then suppose you need to know the structure of cholesterol. Well, here it is. Cholesterol has, at carbon 3, or at position 3, it has an OH. At position 5, between position 5 and 6, it has a double bond. Both 18 and 19 are methyl groups, and 20 is 6-methyl-2-heptyl. See that? Now I'm going to show you how to put in these groups. Let's look at cholesterol. It has an OH on 3. There it is. It has a double bond on 5, which means the double bond is between 5 and 6. There it is. 18 and 19 are CH3s. There's a CH3 on 18, and there's one on 19. And 20 is 6-methyl-2-heptyl. And if you lengthen that on out, I ran out of room on the screen, that is 6-methyl-2-heptyl. So you see, all you have to do is remember a simple sentence that tells you the positions of the attached groups, if you already know the numbered steroid structure. Now here's one. Here's testosterone. It has a double bond oxygen at 3. It has a double bond on carbon 4, which means between carbons 4 and 5. 18 and 19 are methyls, and 20 is an OH. Now draw the structure of testosterone. Pause this video and draw the structure of it, and then we'll go on to the next one. Here's another one, and this is important for you to know. Nandrolone is an anabolic steroid. I want you to draw its structure also. It has a double bond oxygen on 3. It has a double bond between carbons 4 and 5. 19 is methyl, and 20 is OH. Draw it, and then compare the structures of nandrolone and testosterone, and you will see how anabolic steroids may be able to mimic steroids. Lipoproteins. Let's talk about lipoproteins. Most lipids are insoluble in water. Well, if they're not soluble in water, they're not going to be soluble in a lot of the components of blood. Therefore, for lipids to be carried throughout the body, something has to carry them other than water. And what carries them? Lipoproteins. Now, what are lipoproteins? Well, they're a complex arrangement, if you will. They contain glycerophospholipids. They contain cholesterol. They contain esters of cholesterol. They contain triacylglycerols, which you know as triglycerides, and other things, proteins, bundled in such a way that the polar part of that lipoprotein is on the surface of the micelle or the group, and the nonpolar part is inside. Let me see if I can show you. Here is a representation of a lipoprotein. Now here on the inside, we have the nonpolar molecules. These are the hydrophobic structures. They are esters of cholesterol. There are your triacylglycerols, triglycerides, you know, your fats. And here on the surface, we have the polar molecules. The polar molecules are composed of such things as the glycerophospholipids, cholesterol, and some of your proteins, among other things. So let's look at three lipoproteins, the very low-density lipoproteins. These very low-density lipoproteins are predominantly triacylglycerols, triglycerides, folks, fats. The LDLs are low-density lipoproteins. They are predominantly esters of cholesterol. And the HDLs, the high-density lipoproteins, well, they're predominantly proteins. So all of these, the VLDLs, the LDLs, and the HDLs, are going to be expected to differ in composition and in density. Now let's look at each one individually. Let's start with the VLDL. These lipoproteins are the ones that tie up your triglycerides or your fats, and the phospholipids and the cholesterol. They bind them in the liver and then they move them to other places in the body for storage. Maybe they're going to be out in the arteries. Maybe they're going to be along the cell walls. So a high VLDL number indicates excessive triglycerides and cholesterol. LDLs, the low-density lipoproteins. Well, these lipoproteins transport and regulate cholesterol in the peripheral tissue. They collect the cholesterol and the phospholipids from the liver, and they move them to the cells where they're used for a variety of things, cell wall structure and so forth. And again, high levels may indicate high levels of cholesterol, but the major difference between VLDL and LDL is the small amount of triglycerides in the LDL, small amount of fat in the LDL as compared to the VLDL. Small amount of triglycerides, or the small amount of triacylglycerols, whichever way you want to say it. Now the HDLs, the high-density lipoproteins. These lipoproteins transport plasma cholesterol. Okay, that's cholesterol from the bloodstream. From the peripheral tissue over to the liver, where it can be converted into bile acids and stuff and discarded. And if you have a high number here, it indicates that your body has the ability to rid the body of excess cholesterol or is able to manage the cholesterol that's in the body. When you look at lab results, you may be given a ratio of LDL to HDL. And you would like that ratio to be less than 2.5. And you might be given, or you might be given a ratio of cholesterol to HDL, and you would like that ratio to be less than 5. It's a fascinating study.
Now that we have introduced you to the alkanes, you understand the concept of hydrocarbons. And we have other hydrocarbons yet to study. Alkanes, we have studied. Alkenes, alkynes, aromatics, and so forth. But in all of this, we really should talk about something that is an impact to you on your daily life. And that is something as common and simple as diesel fuel. Now, do you know what diesel fuel is? Do you know that there are several kinds? Let's start off by talking a little bit about petroleum diesel. That is diesel that is extracted from the same source that gas or gasoline is extracted, from the oil that we pump out of the ground. The diesel is the much heavier component of that oil. Diesel molecules usually have somewhere between C10, C24, in other words, 10 to 24 carbons. While gasoline may only have 7 to 11 carbons in that. So you've got diesel fuel, which is the big monster ones, and gasoline, which is the much lighter ones, and in between you have kerosene. But let's continue our talk about diesel. Diesel fuel, petroleum diesel, is an efficient and effective fuel, but it's got problems. For one thing, it's very often polluted with sulfur. And if it's polluted with sulfur and you burn it, then you get the carbon dioxide and the water and some carbon monoxide like you would get from burning any hydrocarbon fuel. But the sulfur is going to give you some sulfur dioxide also, which may change to sulfur trioxide in the air. And then when it gets in a wet environment and it rains, it's going to rain sulfuric acid. So it can be a real problem. And taking the sulfur out of diesel fuel is a process that can be expensive. Diesel is more dense than gasoline. The molecules are bigger and they wind around each other. The problem is when the weather gets cold, the diesel gets thick and thicker, and sometimes will even solidify if the weather's really cold. So what do you have to do to your diesel engine? You have to keep it hot. You have to keep that diesel engine warm. And sometimes you even have to heat the fuel tanks in order to keep the diesel flowing. Do you know the difference between highway diesel and off-road diesel? Well, about the only thing you would notice if you looked at it is the off-road diesel is red. But in reality, the highway diesel is taxed one way, and the off-road diesel is taxed a different way, at a lower value, because the off-road diesel is expected to be used in farm machinery and on farms and not to be used on the highway. So bear that in mind. But the diesel fuel that we really need to talk about is biodiesel. So that is what we're getting ready to take a little bit of a study on, is biodiesel. What it is, where it comes from, and why it might be a good thing for us to use. So let's look at biodiesel.
Biodiesel, just what is it? Well, it's not the chicken grease you're talking about or the stuff that's used to fry your French fries in. And unlike diesel fuel that we get from petroleum, biodiesel is a mixture of glycerol and ethyl esters that are made from plant and animal fats. And it's interesting because it's a renewable fuel. We don't have to dig it up out of the earth. It is biodegradable. It burns cleaner than the regular petroleum-type diesel, and certainly cleaner than a lot of other fuels, producing less carbon dioxide and, very importantly, no oxides of sulfur. Also, it doesn't produce the carcinogenic stuff that is often known to create problems, particularly with lung cancer. But in its pure form, if you have an older vehicle, it may degrade the rubber hoses and so forth. And I'm talking about vehicles, probably before the 1990s. Now, there's a lot of research going on with this right now. And one of the areas of research is regarding the most efficient plants to use for biodiesel production. And when we're looking at efficient plants, we're talking about plant life that renews very quickly and that we can extract the right kinds of fats from to make the biodiesel. You might be surprised, but a key area being studied is certain algae. And the algae, unlike corn crops and so forth that renew only once a year or maybe twice a year, algae may renew every few days. Chemistry, such a fascinating subject. Biodiesel's produced by reacting a fat, usually one from vegetable oil, that's one that's extracted from plants, with sodium hydroxide, which you know as lye, and often ethyl alcohol. Now here's a fat. Notice that this is a mixed fat. We have a saturated fatty acid on the top one, we have an unsaturated fatty acid in the middle, and we have a saturated fatty acid on the bottom one. We allow that to react, say, with a mixture of ethyl alcohol and sodium hydroxide. And when we do, we're going to produce, first of all, glycerol. And glycerol comes from this part of the fatty acid molecule. It is not a part of biodiesel. Glycerol that we have here is used in the soap industries, it's used in the medicinal industry, a number of places. What makes up the biodiesel, though, happens to be the three ethyl esters. The conglomeration of that is biodiesel. Now the question is that the fuel of the future? Well, I don't think the book is closed on that yet. Well, we've talked about an introduction to lipids and what lipids are. We've talked about fatty acids, and you now know the difference between fatty acids and non-fatty acids. We talked again about esters, but this time we talked about the esters that make up the triglycerides, the triacyl glycerols. We talked about the esters of glycerol, but we also talked about the esters that make up waxes. We talked about steroid structure and how you can recognize steroid structure and how, if you need to know the formula or the structure of a particular steroid, how you can learn it easily. We talked about lipoproteins and what lipoproteins are and the various kinds of lipoproteins. And we wrapped up on a little bit on biodiesel, an interesting science chemistry. A better way to teach and learn chemistry.